This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about airline food.
Which is very appropriate for us because Lauren and I were just on one of those airplane things.
Four of them, in fact.
Oh my gosh, you're right. You are right. My body is outside of space and time. I think it's 33 o'clock right now. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, we just got back from Hawaii, from our field trip to Hawaii. And we also took a couple of days out in Maui. So we were on all of the airplanes.
A small one and a big one.
Uh-huh. Two small ones and two big ones because we came back.
We did. I mean, my mind is still there.
Yes.
But my body has been returned.
You know, what is time anyway?
Truer words have not been said. Or have they? We actually have wanted to talk about this for a while, and it's pretty frequently requested. And so we thought, yeah, this is a good time.
Sure.
We'd just been on a plane. We had many bottles of Prosecco.
Which I did not know that you could get on airplanes and are delightful, and they are screw caps. And I also did not know that about the tiny little mini bottles.
But... yeah, we took a minute to figure it out.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that when the last time they did their service, the flight attendant just handed me one. She didn't even ask if I wanted another. She was like, I can tell.
Well, when I asked for one, she like sighed and got it out for me. And I think that she just went ahead and got you one too.
She didn't want to have to
she
go
was like...
back into that bottom drawer. I appreciate that.
It was 6:30 in the morning local time.
Again, time. Very, very confusing right now. And I wanted to ask, what is the most interesting thing you've ever had on a plane? Was that it?
Oh, wow. I think that was my favorite thing that I've had in recent memory on an airplane. I haven't taken that many longer flights recently. So aside from when I was a kid, the only time that I ever had an opportunity to have like a real in-flight meal was going to and from England. And I really liked the little cheese plate snack boxes that Delta had for a while. That was my favorite because cheese is delicious. I know what's in it, so you don't have to worry about like ingredient labels and stuff like that. And, see above every cheese.
I mean, enough said, right?
Right.
Cheese.
Yeah, yeah. How about you?
I had that Romanesco cauliflower once.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was pretty soon after we started the show and after we did that episode, because, of course, cauliflower was the second episode we did.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. and I had never had it, and then they served it on the plane, and it was beautiful and strange and
fractal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. And my flight to Australia, which is probably one of the best food experiences I've ever had. No sponsorship here, just it was. They had a bag of snacks when you got off of the plane, which was very much appreciated for a poor college student.
Oh, yeah.
And they had ice cream. And not like the like little tin kind, like ice cream.
Like a cone?
Yeah.
Like a heckin' cone?
A heckin' cone of ice cream.
Jeez.
It was really wonderful.
What technology is... How?
Well,
there are no scoops on in the air. I don't know. I don't know why my brain is refusing to acknowledge that. I'm just imagining all of the potential for pratfalls with ice cream cones on an airplane with turbulence and all that.
Oh, now that needs to be done in some movie somewhere. Absolutely no question about it. But all of this brings us to our question.
Oh, yeah.
Airline food. What is it?
Well, people need to eat.
Yeah.
Like multiple times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are on airplanes.
Whoa. So deep.
Yeah, yeah. Food on airplanes, it happens.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
As far as our question normally goes.
Yeah. offerings do vary pretty drastically. For example, our recent economy class trip featured sandwiches and wraps, which were served with chips or cookies or maybe a piece of fruit, depending on if you got a special meal or like the regular meal. First class services, whoo, buddy. I read a 2012 article from the New York Times that mentioned a dish of Basque shrimp with turmeric-scented pasta and lemongrass. A braised soy-flavored duck with yam rice. More recently from Singapore Airlines, beef with foie gras and a white wine truffle sauce. And forget about plastic trays. Singapore Airlines specifically, their first class meals are served on Wedgwood bone china designed specifically for the airline.
My goodness.
I know. On Emirates, a canapé of marinated feta with mango and basil or of a poached lobster with wasabi mayonnaise, a cheese course after dessert.
What?
I know! On Etihad, the protein of your choice is cooked to temperature for you on the plane, and they brew fresh cappuccinos on board.
What?
I know.
See, I have been fortunate enough to be upgraded to first class before, but never on a flight long enough.
Oh, to have a full meal?
And I'm trying to remember. I know you get the alcohol.
Yeah.
And like a wide variety of snacks to choose from.
Yeah, like a big old basket of like sun chips.
Yes, an M&M peanut.
Oh, and I love a sun chip.
I love an M&M peanut.
No sponsorship.
No.
Just saying true words.
Yes. Okay, but what about nutrition?
Well, okay, so it depends. Again, in economy, it's usually heavier on the carbs and fat than on the protein, pretty low on vegetables and fiber. Some airlines are better than others at providing nutritional information and ingredient lists, which is really heckin' frustrating. Speaking as a human with, like, a lot of food intolerances, like you say, hey, turkey sandwich. I'm like, okay, what's in the honey mustard that comes on it? Is it something that will essentially give me food poisoning for a few hours? You don't know?
Yeah.
And that's my rant.
For now.
That's my current turkey sandwich rant.
Tomorrow will be a ham sandwich rant. It rotates throughout the week like most sandwich choices do.
Absolutely.
A tray of airline food has an average of about 1,500 calories. But as you say, Lauren, that's an average of a wide variance.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There is a site called Diet Detective that runs investigations of major U.S. airlines every year and reports on the calorie counts, the health and safety of the food and water. As of 2018, Alaskan Airlines came out on top.
Of which I am a frequent flyer.
Yeah? Yes. Well, there you go.
Because they partner with a lot of other airlines. Again, no sponsorship. Numbers-wise, this is a $13 billion global industry we're talking about, and it's estimated it will be $18 billion by 2021.
Singapore Airlines spent $1 million building a low-pressure kitchen here on Earth to simulate the working environment of airplanes at cruising altitude.
Oof.
Serious planning does go into this stuff other than building wacky kitchens like that. It takes some 6 to 8 months to design and implement new menus. Also, Korean Air owns a farm with over 1,600 cattle and some 5,000 chickens and like grains and vegetables that it uses for its first class meals.
Wow.
They have their own cows. And yeah, just for like a concept of scale, United Airlines serves 50 million meals a year, which is about 14,000 every day. Emirates Airlines out of Dubai says they handle 90,000 meals a day.
That's a lot.
And it's not even their capacity, as we will learn later.
No. The largest airline catering company in the world, LSG Sky Chefs, a subsidiary of Lufthansa, churns out a million meals a day.
Ooh.
And a flight delay of over 6 hours necessitates tossing all of the food loaded onto the delayed aircraft.
That's because, contrary to how prepackaged everything might seem, most airline meals are made fresh within like 24 to 36 hours of departure at or near the airport in question. The hot dishes are par-cooked to a safe temperature and then wrapped for heating and serving on the plane, or pre-cooked then chilled for reheating on longer flights. It's considered preferable to do the former because of the high energy expenditure of reheating food in the air.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A 2013 study found that airlines charge 2,600% more for food items than supermarkets.
The typical airline food tray is allowed just 1.5 inches of height, a little under 4 centimeters, due to space constraints. And that's why airline food might appear flat.
It does appear flat.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, the International Air Transport Association found that airplane passengers racked up 5.7 million tons of trash. And most of this trash was largely food-related waste.
Sure.
Due to agricultural and border laws around the world, leftovers, especially from international flights, generally must be are destroyed.
Oh, wow.
This, of course, has led to a black market of airplane food. In India, a smuggled 1 liter bottle of Tropicana will run you 32 cents.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Pilots get different meals.
What?
Yes. Which is an extra precaution to prevent food poisoning.
Oh.
Yes.
I mean, good.
Now's the time to become a pilot, Lauren.
Oh, no. Nope.
Not for you?
No, thank you.
Okay. In 2012, the EPA found that 1 in 8 planes failed to meet their water safety standards, particularly, sidebar, hot water.
Yeah. The way that the tea and coffee containers are cleaned or not cleaned in between services can lead to some not completely terrifying, but certainly off-putting numbers of pathogens like bacteria and stuff like that in those containers. Experts advise that you look up your flight carrier's ratings before you drink the coffee or tea that's prepared on board your flight, which is going to change how I fly.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Also, something else I read is a lot of flight attendants have said they recommend that you bring a wipe and wipe down the food tray.
Oh, really?
Because it might not have been cleaned, and a lot of people use them as diaper changing tables.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh,
we're learning so much right after we float. This would have been great knowledge to have beforehand.
I'm like, welp.
But alas. Something that can help you listeners, though, if you don't know about this, is special options.
Yeah.
And this was something that was new to me, but a lot of airlines these days, you can go and check out, it's like 40 options sometimes of different types of meals, like low sodium or bland.
Sure, yeah. Or different dietary preferences for evo-lacto vegetarian, or especially if you're going to a lot of places in Asia, you might have more options for different types of different meals that will fit your lifestyle. And frequently, these meals are fresher, even fresher than the rest of the fare, and are delivered to you first before anyone else gets theirs.
Yeah, and you feel super cool.
Really special.
Yeah. Until you open it and you're like, oh, no.
You're like, oh, this is still airline food.
And something else that makes sense is international airlines like to cater to the cuisines of their home country and also show it off to new people that are coming, which is one of the things I actually, when I first flew, I knew there was this negative reputation around airline food, but I was excited to see what am I going to get flying to France? You know, I was interested, and I'm always still to this day, what am I going to get if I'm flying to X country?
Oh, sure. Yeah, or just anywhere. I don't know. I'm delighted by the entire process. Like, it's It's frequently not extraordinarily delicious food on economy American air flights.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something. You get the little kit. There's all the little accoutrements. Like, you have a tiny salt packet. It's so cool.
It's a salt packet.
It's so
and
tiny.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to be in there?
It's like those bubble machines with the where you get the little surprise toys.
Yes, we spent a lot of time at those machines on our recent trip.
We did. But yes, the special options are worth checking out, I would say. They're free. I mean, you know,
yeah.
No reason not to, I guess.
Yeah, totally cool. And this about brings us to some history.
Yes, but first, it brings us to a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with history.
Yes.
Airline food goes back about as long as commercial airplane travel. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
A 1919 flight from London to Paris served the first airline meal, a 3 shillings worth box lunch of a sandwich and fruit. And for reference, the first commercial passenger flight took place in 1914, I believe, in Florida, St. Petersburg. However, if we want to count hot air balloons, which I do,
absolutely, yes, please, yes,
then we can go back to 1836.
Ooh.
When rich Europeans were served food while aloft. What food, do you ask? Oh, I'll tell you. Crew members made quick ovens out of water and quicklime and would cook things like steak, sear steak on a hot air balloon.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a chemical reaction that creates heat. And
do it on a hot air balloon.
And this sounds terrifying to me personally.
Yes. That's for the rich folks trying to live on the edge.
Yeah.
Back in the early days of plane travel in the 1920s, weight, as in how much is going on board, how much does the craft weigh, was way more of a concern. And it still is, just not to the same extent. People would frequently be weighed before they got on the plane, and I've been on a plane that did this.
Oh, yeah.
And it caused much general anxiety.
Oh, no.
Everybody's like, oh.
Like,
no. And then they said it in kilograms, and we were all from the United States, so there's a moment of silence where everyone's calculating
in their head.
Anyway, so that was a consideration that went into food. And another one was energy. Engines didn't have enough energy to spare for heating food, meaning food was typically served cold. Dishes ranged from fruit salad to cold chicken, fancy schmancy sandwiches brought out in wicker baskets with the lightest available chinaware.
Ah.
Best bill of fare in the air, a TWA advertisement read.
And I've heard that cold fried chicken was actually the most popular.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Or, I mean, I read it. I didn't like, it wasn't like around the water cooler.
Well, it could be in this office. It very well could be.
Absolutely.
European Airlines did you one better. They boasted selections like lobster salads, ooh, Niçoise salads, cheese and fruit, and of course, champagne.
Of course.
Of course. The predecessors to British Airways and Qantas, which is the one I mentioned earlier, no sponsorship again, but best food experience I've ever had on a plane, offered lobster, foie gras, roasted chicken, ox tongue, and peaches and Melba sauce.
Aw. Mm-hmm.
Important to note, at this time, flying was rare for most people.
Super rare, yeah.
Yes. So airlines really didn't rotate out menu options. There was no need to mix things up because hardly anyone would notice. Mm-hmm. 30 people on a plane, most stuff brought on board was brought aboard on these like thermoses that connected to each other. Some flights even handed out cigarettes. Man, times have changed.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As we move into the 1930s, we see the arrival of kitchens on some aircraft. That meant beef, roasted mid-flight. Some Pan Am flights even came with dining rooms to enjoy said roasted beef.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the cruise ship system with groups of diners going in at different times, different intervals, to white cloth tables. Maybe there was a buffet there. Pan Am was really a leader. At this time. They had ads bragging about their toaster ovens that could heat pre-made meals in 300 seconds. I highly recommend looking it up.
They're beautiful.
Very entertaining.
The hairstyles alone are worth the price of admission, which is $0. So,
exactly. In 1935, United Airlines began offering hot cocoa, also onboard flowers, crab meat cocktails, mignon of veal, baba au rum. On St. Patrick's Day, Lego lamb. I was on an airplane once on St. Patrick's Day, and we all got free Bloody Marys.
Huh.
That was an interesting day.
That's not thematic, but sure.
No, but I was like, ooh.
You're fine.
Okay. A year later, United was the first to have a functional airplane kitchen. And these meals at the time were multi-purposed. First, the obvious, providing sustenance. Two, turning for what, for many, was a frightening or anxiety-inducing experience into one that they enjoyed might be too strong a word, but at least they were slightly less miserable.
Sure.
Because at the time, most people hadn't flown. Planes weren't as safe then as they are now. And on top of that, the technology didn't exist to be up as high as we go now, so you had to fly closer to the ground.
Yeah, which means more air turbulence.
Right, which means greater chance of spilling your food and drink, and also greater chance of air sickness. And there was no pressurization, which meant food tasted more like it did on the ground. So it was kind of better in that sense. and there were no in-flight movies. So it was also a form of entertainment.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Mm-hmm. And three, food was a way to stand out from other competitors, including cruises.
The FAA regulated flight prices for, until the 1970s.
70s. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
So basically the only way that people had, that airlines had to stand out was the extras like this.
Yes, and if I'm told I'm going to get on a flight that's going to possibly make me air sick and just shake me around all the time.
I want a champagne.
Yes, maybe. Well, I don't want the food, but I do want the champagne. Some flights even landed somewhere for lunch, enjoyed in the hangar and or picnic tables while the plane refueled for long journeys.
Ah.
Then, with the 1940s, we had the advent of frozen food on flights. And the timing, once again, was in part due to the military and a concern around the nutrition of U.S. soldiers being flown into Europe. They wanted hot, good food, which they had determined, they being the government, was good for morale. TV dinners took inspiration from this. 7 years later, you can see our frozen food episode for that.
Mm-hmm.
And this made room for more options.
Oh, yeah.
And in the 1950s, options abound.
Oh, yeah. The 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Things like the Fujiyama room of Northwest Airlines featuring cut-up pineapples decked out with shrimp, cheese, fruit, and cherry tomatoes. Please look up pictures. It's glorious.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Regional U.S. airlines serve things that showcase their cuisine, like Creole dishes out of Southern Airlines. And let's not forget serving style.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Because that was a thing, too. Charcuterie would be cut mid-aisle as the guests looked on. On Lufthansa, passengers could enjoy beer out of a rolling keg, or my favorite, the Hunt breakfast of Western Airlines.
Hunt breakfast.
The Hunt. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In which the attendants would dress in red coats and hats, and they'd have hunting horns hanging from their belt before serving breakfast. And the experience was complete with the sounds of dogs barking and horns blowing.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. Wow, indeed.
I'm trying to picture, like, the beautiful, sassy Delta attendants that I know and love, like, being asked to dress up in a hunting uniform and play, like, braying hound noises. Oh, geez. But yeah, like roasts carved tableside or seatside, seafood trays, martini service, free packs of cigarettes for dessert.
I cannot get over that. And then we get to the 60s with the adoption of more jets, more seats, and aircraft, and more people willing to fill those seats.
Willing and able.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Flights took less time. Airline companies had to find ways to cook more quickly. This was the time most airlines switched from glassware to plastic to save money, space, and energy. No need to wash and store. Mm-hmm. Also, foods that didn't need silverware became the norm. And also trendy food items like pre-deboned Cornish hen, which I remember my grandparents serving this. When I read that, I was like, oh, yeah.
Huh.
I guess it was a trend at some time.
I guess so.
The 70s saw an even greater uptick in food options, especially for first class. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. A meal could take 2 hours total from start to finish. Japan Airlines offered a tea time with sake selections. Post-World War II, charter flights were cheap and available, and this led to long delays at airports. And that did not sit well with folks paying top dollar to fly. So airlines began to offer a cheaper tourist class, which we now know as economy class. Like you said, Lauren, prior to this, the government regulated airfares. So everybody was charging the same route. This drastically changed.
Yes.
Flying.
Yes.
Yeah. But before that happened, and maybe still, like I said, in first class, the 70s were peak choice, like vegetarian options, Hindu options, all these things started to come into play. Mm-hmm. And then,
yes,
when Southwest Airlines launched in 1977, they called themselves the Peanut Airline.
Oh, this was right after that regulation was thrown out. So ticket prices could be whatever you wanted them to be.
Yes. And their gimmick was super cheap ticket prices in exchange for less of the frills, a.k.a. you're not getting a meal, but you're getting some peanuts. And I actually went on a flight a couple years ago. It wasn't Southwest. I think it was AirTran, which is now owned by Southwest. But in either case, you get a single pretzel in the packet. And you're like, You turn over the packet and it says something like, look at this pretzel. Remember how cheap your ticket was. Look at this pretzel again. Please enjoy.
Oh, my goodness.
I loved it. Oh, my gosh. It's so funny to me learning this because peanuts are just so associated with airlines in my head.
Yeah, yeah. It's like popcorn in movie theaters. It's just like that is what you get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another thing associated with airlines, Biscoff cookies.
On Delta flights, yeah.
Yes. And we went on a very brief but derailed tangent right before recording because we remembered Biscoff cookies. So just a side note, in 1985, that's the year Delta adopted it. Hopefully we'll return.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to do a Biscoff cookie episode. Yes. It's also one of the Ben Bolin's lovely girlfriend, Brandy, works for Delta Airlines. And so occasionally, if she like kind of wants to bribe you to do something or bribe me to do something anyway, because this is a very effective bribe for me, she'll just like pass me a little packet of Biscoff cookies. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, it is. In 1987, the chief of American Airlines decrees a single olive cut from every salad served in first class. And this amounted to a savings of $40,000.
I looked into some of the more recent numbers, and it is still crazy cutthroat. Like, Delta ran studies around 2012 and found that they could save $500,000 a year by slicing their limes for beverages into 16ths instead of 10ths.
What?
$500,000. That removing a single strawberry from first class salads would save them $210,000 a year.
That is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
No.
The 80s and 90s were all about economy, and airline meals suffered to the point that they got this rep for being all terrible all the time, particularly in the United States. I think that it was a little bit better in many other places. This was also a prime era of packaged and frozen convenience foods, and I have to assume that the same cultural reasons why, like, cocktails were awful during that time led to in-flight options being awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When JetBlue debuted in 2000, they came out swinging, offering a variety of complimentary snacks like the ever-popular Terrible chips. To this day, they hand out 8 million bags a year. That's a little bit of a cult following from what I understand.
Ah.
Yes. Post 9/11, almost every domestic flight does away with in-meal flights to cut down on cost, since less people than ever are flying. Knives are prohibited on flights and in airport restaurants. And this is when we see the adoption of buy on board foods.
Yeah, the economic recession of the early 2000s paired with those new regulations were a real 1-2 punch. 9 days after the 9/11 attacks, American and TWA both announced that they were scaling back their in-flight meals. It happened so quickly. And Delta and Northwest did the same within a few weeks. Domestic air carriers lost $60 billion over the next decade due to decreasing passenger numbers and increasing fuel prices. And more regulations were coming.
Yes, the plot to blow up planes with liquid explosives happened in 2006. I'm sure a lot of you remember that. And this is when we get the ban on liquids over 3 ounces. That's when it went into effect. So passengers either had to wait until the beverage service on a plane or buy an overpriced drink in the terminal, or do what I do, which is hopefully remember to bring your empty water bottle and then fill it up on the other side.
Oh, yeah. You can bring an empty bottle.
Yes.
Of whatever kind you want.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a water bottle.
Doesn't have to be, yeah. Anyway. I think it would probably look askance at you if it were an empty wine bottle. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, you might not want to do that. In 2007, Emirates comes out with the largest flight catering facility. Their capability was, slash is, 15,000 meals a day. Most airlines switched to sous vide in 2009 as a way to cook large amounts of food on the ground before packaging it up and reheating it mid-flight.
Yeah, the same thing that makes your fancy, fancy restaurant steak super fancy also makes your mediocre flight food.
It can do both.
Warm. It can do both. It does help with the tenderness of proteins especially, so that's nice. It keeps everything nice and moist.
Hmm. That same year.
Oh, this is my favorite.
Sir Richard Branson claims to have received a letter from a passenger detailing his, quote, culinary journey from hell, consisting of more mustard than any man could consume in a month, potatoes, quote, passed through the digestive tract of a bird, and a cuboid of beige matter. Branson's airline is the one that had, maybe still has, those ice cubes shaped like his head.
Yeah, I think this has been confirmed by Virgin that this really happened, that he called the sender of this letter to apologize to thank them for helpful yet tongue-in-cheek feedback.
I can see that.
And I think Virgin apologized for the experience, but said that it was an award-winning menu that was quite popular on their Indian flights. So I have a copy of the whole letter.
Oh, do you?
Yes. I don't know. I think I could probably just read it out loud. Maybe we'll do that at the end. Post-credit scene. It's pretty great. It's extremely British.
Oh, my goodness. Kind of related. I have seen a handful of articles and TV specials about revamping airline food. I feel like there was a Mission Impossible. Not Mission Impossible. I don't watch Food Network.
Kitchen?
Maybe. There's more than one, isn't there? Restaurant Impossible, Kitchen Impossible. It's one of those things.
It's one of the Gordon Ramsay things.
Yeah, about getting your food on an airline.
Sure.
In 2016, that's all you need to know. In 2016, American Airlines partnered with Food Network chef Manit Chauhan to up the ante on the meals available on international flights. Duck confit, lamb osobuco.
Yeah, it's a major movement as airlines have started competing for customer attention again. But it's not super new.
American had released a statement in 2008, determined to remove the stigma attached to airline food. In 1988, American became the first airline to enlist the expertise of prominent and well-respected chefs to help craft the direction of its in-flight food service.
Yeah, these days it is common to hire even like James Beard award-winning chefs and to feature ingredients local to the departing airport or to the receiving airport to fit with like eat local kind of trends.
Yes. And also allergy awareness has really come into play. The recent flight we were on, peanuts.
Yeah, they announced at the gate. They were like, also, this is a no peanut flight. So don't like throw peanut butter sandwiches at anybody. They said it nicer than that. They had a prepared
They knew that I like to throw a peanut butter sandwich mid-flight and then get up and fetch it. It's my flight exercise.
Annie, I know that you would never throw a peanut butter sandwich.
Never do it. Never. Even saying it, my stomach was like, no. You monster.
As of 2017, the Hong Kong airline Cathay Pacific announced that they would start carrying a beer brewed specifically to taste good during flights. It's made with honey and lungenberries.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. They also famously start their first class service with Krug champagne and caviar.
Whoa.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of alongside all of this, terminal food courts are getting better and better. Here in Atlanta, we have a James Beard award-winning restaurant in our airport. It is so good.
Which one is that?
It's not One Flew South. Is it One Flew South?
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally One Flew South.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, they're amazing.
It's so good.
I'm so
glad. I've made the journey out to Terminal E.
Yeah, me too. Gosh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And crossing terminals in Atlanta is, well, it's easier than doing it in many other airports, but still no joke.
It's no joke.
I've arrived early to go today.
Yes.
Arriving early is no joke.
It's not, especially when you're already supposed to be arriving early for your flight. But yeah, I think a lot of people have probably seen that in airport terminals, this kind of similar thing of showcasing whatever that city
local
is local to that.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that about brings us to today.
Yes, and to some science. But first, it brings us to one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Let's hit it! Give me a vacation!
Vacation!
Give me a wave!
Surfing!
Give me a city tour!
The trolley!
Give me animals!
The zoo!
Give me some sea life! Give me museums!
Balboa Park!
Give me a woo!
Roller coaster!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
We're back with science.
Yes, flavor science.
Yes.
Because the science of taste is complicated. As we have discussed on the show before, what you taste is not just the compounds in food that interact with nerves in your tongue and send signals to your brain that say, oh, this has a flavor. We humans use all of our available senses to taste food. One that modern airlines are working on perhaps the most in these our days of Instagram is the look of food. The website The Points Guy ran a piece in 2017 describing Singapore Airlines' manager of in-flight services doing this initial round of dish judging of like 200 dishes based solely on appearance.
Wow.
First round, just appearance.
How many people are Instagramming their plain food? I mean, I Instagram the Prosecco.
It's pretty popular. I mean, there's something glorious about that weird little like toolkit.
Yeah, I agree. And also, as we're going to get into more in a second, it might matter more because taste is kind of...
Oh, sure.
Well, there's a lot going on with it.
There is.
Yes. According to some studies, noise, like a plane engine say, decreases the brain's ability to detect sweet taste.
Yeah. It's running at about 85 decibels, which isn't too wild, but it is enough to mess with you. On the ground, research out of Cornell showed that the noise of jet engines dulls sweet flavors and enhances savory or umami tastes because the vibrations like set off a nerve in your inner ear. That just mucks with stuff.
Huh.
Yeah. These days, recipes for in-flight meals are purposefully made so that they would be too sweet on the ground, but they're just right in the air.
That's so interesting.
Some airlines even offer noise-canceling headphones to their first-class passengers. I'm not sure that would help with everything, actually, because, like, part of our enjoyment of food is the sound that it makes as we eat it, particularly crisp and crunchy foods. There was a study out of Oxford. Not related to planes, I don't think, but they boosted the sound of the crunch of Pringles as some subjects were eating them. And those subjects rated the chips as 15% fresher and crisper than the control group.
Oh, my goodness. dry air and altitude make it more difficult to smell food, which is super important to taste, which is why you want to bring in the spices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is also why some experts recommend Bloody Marys on a plane. So done and done.
The German airline Lufthansa serves as much tomato juice as they do beer. Some 423,000 gallons of each every year.
Whoa.
And this factoid made them so curious that they actually hired Germany's Fraunhofer Institute for Building Physics in order to study passengers' perceptions of sweetness and saltiness. And they discovered that both dropped by up to 30% during arid simulated flight conditions.
And speaking of arid flight conditions, flights can have like less than 20% humidity, which is way less than most of us are used to.
Way less. Yeah, like 10 to 20% humidity, which is, just wild. And so what's happening here with our perceptions in the air is a few things. First, many flavor compounds that your tongue and your other in-mouth receptors interact with have to be dissolved in water before they can interact with those nerve receptors. And that means that if your mouth is dry, you'll taste less. This is why many airline entrees are heavily sauced and meats are chosen for their high fat content, and sandwiches tend to come with way too much dressing. This is also why the bread served on airplanes almost always feels stale, like the air just saps the water right out of it. However, newfangled steam ovens on planes can help rather than convection. But also, the pressure and dryness of the air causes some inflammation in the walls of your sinuses, which is the network of air tubes in your head, right? A good amount of what we perceive as flavor is actually volatile compounds bouncing around in our sinuses as we chew food. Some 80% of those volatile compounds under normal conditions will rise from your mouth into your nose while you're eating, where they can be detected by the smell nerve endings that are up there. Like, think about how flat food tastes when you have a head cold or allergies that are inflaming your sinuses. Same principle.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the air pressure, the low air pressure, it's the equivalent of like 6,000 to 8,000 feet above sea level on a pressurized plane, might like directly bork with your taste buds. And I use that incredibly scientific term bork because I saw this repeated over and over again, but I wasn't able to find a scientific explanation for why.
Like Bork?
No, the word Bork was not repeated over and over again.
Oh, I was so excited. I thought we'd stumbled on something.
No. I suspect that, like, because your taste buds can be sort of bundly, and some things make them bundle more, and some things make them sort of open up. And so maybe the low pressure makes them bundle more. I don't know. I couldn't find anything convincing. It might not even be true. It might just be something that food journalists keep reporting.
Maybe it happens to some people, not other people.
True.
Who knows?
Yeah. But yeah, all of the science is to say that if you have a choice, you should pick bold flavored, sweeter foods and drinks. Spicy stews, really big fruity wines, tomato-based sauces rather than cream sauces. Don't go for anything subtle.
Like we both did.
Yep.
And I do want to add in one more fact here that I can't remember what airline it was. I think it might have been AirTran again. But they got rid of their tomato juice, and it caused such a backlash that they brought it back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Heck.
People were not having it.
Like, no.
I need my tomato juice on the flight.
Yeah. I see.
So people, they've cottoned on to this somehow.
They have. They have. Oh, and also, in case you were wondering, no, you do not get tipsier on a plane than you do on the ground. But you might feel tipsier because the low pressure restricts your blood's oxygen uptake, which is a thing that makes you feel kind of woozy and lightheaded. Drinking alcohol also restricts your blood's oxygen uptake. So it's a similar, it's a symptom, but not,
right,
not caused by the alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. I think, yeah, in general, even if I'm not drinking on a plane, I just feel a little...
Oh, sure. Just tripped out.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially longer flights.
Oh, sure, yeah. I don't know who I am after like 6 hours of sitting in the same chair.
Yeah. Yeah, and you stand up and you look around and you're thinking, where am I?
And there's so many people, and then like all of a sudden you remember that you're hurtling through the sky.
Yes.
In a metal tube.
And these folks are just sleeping. They're just asleep.
And Space Jam is readily available on your video screen, and you don't know why it's under classics. You don't know why.
But you have to watch it.
But you really need to. That movie does not hold up.
Upon rewatching it, I'm not sure it was a rewatch. That might have been my first time. I don't remember any of that. Not any of it. Bill Murray's in it, everyone. He's in it for a lot.
He is. He's surprisingly in it. Wayne Knight plays a major character.
Yeah. This was the trip of Wayne Knight.
It really was. It really was. Annie and I watched Jurassic Park.
We had to.
Yeah. Well, we visited one of the places in Hawaii where Jurassic Park filmed.
And that night we said.
We said, this is it.
We've got to watch Jurassic Park.
Nothing else to do about it.
And we did.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this brings us to the end of our airline food episode.
It does. And it brings us to listener mail. Anyway, Sarah wrote, listening to your Gruyere cheese episode, I found a call for listener information that I had.
Ooh.
We went to France and Switzerland on our honeymoon and took a day trip up to Gruyere at the recommendation of a friend. The historic town is on the top of a hill and completely enclosed by the city walls.
Ooh.
There is, in fact, a tour of the castle, which was fascinating. Two fun stories stick out in my memory. The first, it is said that once of the medieval women of the town were caught unawares while their men were off fighting a neighboring kingdom. The women took shelter in the castle with all of their livestock. Then at night, they lit the horns of their goats on fire and sent them out to the main gates. This scared off the would-be invaders, and the castle was saved.
What?
Oh,
flaming
that's
goats?
True. I hope that's true.
Gosh.
The second story is less apocryphal.
During
the 1800s, the castle was purchased by a wealthy merchant family as a summer home. They had a son who was an artist, and they let him and his friends stay at the castle whenever they wanted. This led to many of the walls being painted and many great neoclassical landscapes, including one depiction of the famous flaming goat defense. We did have fondue in the town for lunch that day. I love it so much. But the more traditional dish of the region is raclette, which is where they take half a wheel of cheese and melt it under a burner on the table. You scrape off the freshly melted bits a little like you carve off the meat for shawarma.
Oh, and if y'all have never seen video of this, or, I mean, hopefully seen it in person. I've never seen it in person. It is glorious. Yes. Go look up a video. Raclette.
Yes, and also go look up the flaming goats.
Oh,
the fence.
Please.
It's really good.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Ellen wrote, I was inspired to email you in the first place about the taco episode. I live in Calgary, not too far from the restaurant you mentioned that was sued for using Taco Tuesdays. I happened to walk past it a few days later on my way to get poutine, and I saw the sign they had changed to comply and thought you needed to see it. They now have Taco Tuesdays. T-U-E-S-D-A-Z-E. I guess as long as you spell it differently, you can get away with it. Then, before I got around to emailing you, the watermelon episode came out. I don't know how many Canadian listeners you have, so you may already know this, but the watermelon has become ubiquitous with a Canadian Football League team, the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They have the most diehard fans in all of the CFL, and they can often be seen wearing carved-out watermelons as hats to games. I've never really been able to find a good reason why, but my mom is from a small town in the Saskatchewan, and she figures it's just because the watermelons are green, and that's the team's color. At any rate, it's quite amusing, and I'm sure very sticky for the wearer. There was even a brewery in Saskatoon that created a beer called Melonhead, where the box converted into a cardboard watermelon helmet to wear to games.
It's fantastic. Look up pictures. There's so many things for you to look up.
Oh, they're all worthwhile.
They are.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's the best.
I love it. I love it so much.
Oh.
Thanks to both of them for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. Dear Mr. Branson, reference Mumbai to Heathrow, 7th December 2008. I love the Virgin brand, I really do, which is why I continue to use it despite a series of unfortunate incidents over the last few years. This latest incident takes the biscuit. Ironically, by the end of the flight, I would have gladly paid over 1,000 rupees for a single biscuit following the culinary journey of hell I was subjected to at the hands of your corporation. Look at this, Richard. Just look at it. See image one above. I imagine the same questions are racing through your brilliant mind as were racing through mine on that fateful day. What is this? Why have I been given it? What have I done to deserve this? And which one is the starter and which one is the dessert? You don't get to a position like yours, Richard, with anything less than a generous sprinkling of observational power, so I know you will have spotted the tomato next to the two yellow shafts of sponge on the left. Yes, it's next to the sponge shaft without the green paste. That's got to be the clue, hasn't it? No sane person would serve a dessert with a tomato, would they? Well, answer me this, Richard. What sort of animal would serve a dessert with peas in it? See image two above. I know it looks like a bhaji, but it's in custard, Richard. Custard. It must be the pudding. Well, you'd be fascinated to hear that it wasn't custard. It was a sour gel with a clear oil on top. Its only redeeming feature was that it managed to be so alien to my palate that it took away the taste of the curry emanating from our miscellaneous central cuboid of beige matter. Perhaps the meal on the left might be the dessert after all. Anyway, this is all irrelevant at the moment. I was raised strictly but neatly by my parents, and if they knew I had started dessert before the main course, a sponge shaft would be the least of my worries. So let's peel back the tin foil on the main dish and see what's on offer. I'll try and explain how this felt. Imagine being a 12-year-old boy, Richard. Now imagine it's Christmas morning, and you're sat there with your final present to open. It's a big one, and you know what it is. It's that Goodman stereo you picked out of the catalog and wrote to Santa about. Only you open the present and it's not there. It's your hamster, Richard. It's your hamster in the box and it's not breathing. That's how I felt when I peeled back the foil and saw this. See image three above. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking it's more of that bhaji custard. I admit I thought the same too, but no. It's mustard, Richard. Mustard. More mustard than any man could consume in a month. On the left, we have a piece of broccoli and some peppers in a brown, glue-like oil, and on the right, the chef had prepared some mashed potato. The potato masher had obviously broken, and so it was decided the next best thing would be to pass the potatoes through the digestive tract of a bird. Once it was regurgitated, it was clearly then blended and mixed with a bit of mustard. Everybody likes a bit of mustard, Richard. By now, I was actually starting to feel a little hypoglycemic. I needed a sugar hit. Luckily, there was a small cookie provided. It had caught my eye earlier due to its baffling presentation, see image 4 above. It appears to be in an evidence bag from the scene of a crime. A crime against bloody cooking! Either that or some sort of backstreet underground cookie purchased off a gun-toting maniac high on his own supply of yeast. You certainly wouldn't want to be caught carrying one of those through customs. Imagine biting into a piece of brass, Richard. That would be softer on the teeth than the specimen above. I was exhausted. All I wanted to do was relax, but obviously I had to sit with that mess in front of me for half an hour. I swear the sponge shafts moved at one point. Once cleared, I decided to relax with a bit of your world-famous onboard entertainment. And then he whines about the onboard entertainment for a minute. And then it comes back with a snack towards the end. He says, my only option was to simply stare at the seat in front and wait for either food or sleep. Neither came for an incredibly long time, but when it did, it surpassed my wildest expectations, see image 7 above. Yes, it's another crime scene cookie. Only this time, you dunk it in the white stuff. Richard, what is that white stuff? It looks like it was going to be yogurt. It finally dawned on me what it was after staring at it. It was a mixture between the bhaji custard and the mustard sauce. It reminded me of my first week at university. I'd overheard that you could make a drink by mixing vodka and refreshers. I lied to my new friends and told them I'd done it loads of times. When I attempted to make the drink in a big bowl, it formed a cheese, Richard, a cheese. That cheese looked a lot like your bhaji mustard. So that was that, Richard. I didn't eat a bloody thing. My only question is, how can you live like this? I can't imagine what dinner around your house is like. It must be like something out of a nature documentary. As I said at the start, I love your brand. I really do. It's just a shame that a simple thing could bring it crashing to its knees and begging for sustenance. Yours sincerely, name revoked.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.